It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. No frying pan tonight. I know. Steve Gadlin is out tonight. He's out of town. He'll be back next Friday. So no local inventions, no local innovations, no local entrepreneur tonight. Instead, we've got live Irish jazz music. So that's a nice transition. That's a that's, you know, we provide alternatives here on the download. So that's coming up. No frying pan tonight. Instead, live music, live jazz, Irish jazz. All right, sound good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, in studio with us tonight, our regular food correspondents, Monica Eng and Louisa Chu. I should say Louisa Chu and Monica Eng because they are the duo Chewing.
Yes, we are.
That's right.
The podcast Chewing, which you can find at chewing.xyz.
That's correct.
Trendsetters.
Chewing.xyz. Yes.
There you go. Subscribe today. But it's a great podcast about all things food, issues, trying new things.
Health.
Food and health, yeah. Sometimes healthy food.
How you guys do? Not often. How are you guys?
We're good, Justin.
We're great. We taped a couple episodes tonight and came on over to see our favorite WGN DJ.
You're not really a DJ.
You're a host.
I like DJ. No, I think that actually works. Hey, now. All right. Well, thanks for being here, guys. Let's get to the new song from Cheap Trick. All right. GMOs playing a big role this week. There was some movement, as we know, and we've talked about on this program before. GMO labeling is something that is sort of snaking its way through the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Where are we on that?
So the House passed a version of what they call the DARK Act. Some people call the DARK Act. Some people call it the Fair Food Labeling Bill. And then the Senate has been caught up. They cannot agree. And everybody has been, well, many people wanted to get some sort of national law passed before Vermont, on July 1st, started labeling state by state.
So Vermont was going to, and they still are, on July 1st, they'll be the first state that actually labels on a can of
requires tomatoes,
it says, this is a GMO. This contains
modified ingredients.
Exactly. Companies that produce genetically modified organisms or that kind of
they
food,
don't
they
that.
Don't want that.
Yeah.
Why don't they want that?
Well, that's actually a fantastic question, because if you're proud of your product, of course you want everyone to know that it's in there. And more than 60 countries already require them to be labeled. In the United States, we are one of the few that doesn't. So there's been this long battle, state by state. Should it be national? Should it be state by state? And so finally, as the Vermont deadline started looming, they said, we've got to come up with a national plan. We can't have this patchwork. And it looks like we are going to have the patchwork, at least for now, because even though the Senate committee came to an agreement this week, they haven't had a chance to vote on it. And the House, which would have to agree with it and
get
some sort of harmonious bill together, they're out till July 5th. So this is going to happen in Vermont. Campbell's Soup, General Mills, they've already said, look, we're just going to label. We can't do one label for Vermont and another label for the rest of the country.
This proposal is
saying, let's not have a label, let's have QR codes.
This is the proposal in the Senate.
The proposal in the Senate is different from the House, so they would have to align those bills. But right now they're saying, let's put a QR code on it. Now, I'd like to ask you guys, when's the last time you used a QR code?
That's a good question.
I actually was looking for an app for it because there's a statue outside the building here, and I never know what he's going to say, so you have to scan the QR code.
So
that's what the opponents of this bill say. They're like, you know what? That's tantamount to just not having the information on
communication of the future, Monica.
Right.
QR code.
It seems like it was very promising at one time. So we'll see if they can get 60 votes, but it's going to go ahead in one of our states. And our whole episode last week, I know it sounds really boring, but it's actually a very interesting episode about GMO labeling. We talked to Neil Young. I talked to him at Farm Aid last year.
Well, let's actually set this up, Monica, because you didn't just talk to Neil Young. You and your mom were kind of like GMO groupies. You had to like talk your way into his trailer or something,
I was hosting a panel.
Right.
And so I saw, I was hosting a panel at Farm Aid. And so I saw his manager. I said, hey, you know, I'd love to stop by and just talk to him a bit about GMOs for my podcast.
Is Neil Young a big GMO guy?
What the name of his last album was called? The Monsanto Years. It's pretty much
so
dedicated
he's advocate
to
for that. Yeah.
He's an advocate for labeling.
Yeah, right.
So he had many things to say about campaign finance reform, about which presidential candidates might clean up this
was
country.
Was he cool? Like, was it easy to get, like, him to talk about this stuff, or was he like, I'm done playing guitar, stay away from me?
Well, as I said on the podcast, they said, you want to talk to him for what? I said, it's our podcast. It's called Chewing the Fat. And I had to like put it on my phone and show, hey, see here, you can listen to it on my phone. So the manager took my phone and went into this trailer, tractor trailer, and he came out with no phone. And he said, okay, you're all right.
So my mom
and I walk into the back of this truck, and there are all these exercise machines and hockey jerseys in there. And they said, okay, you can talk to them. I'm like, is my phone somewhere?
Where's my phone? You don't get that back.
So no, they gave it back to me. And he was very nice. You know, he sounds a little grumpy. I guess, you know, if you've got to tour the
country.
You're
Neil Young, man.
But he talked to me about his thoughts on food and food labeling and what he eats and what he doesn't eat and which presidential candidates might be able to stop what he sees as kowtowing to industry and the need for.
Well, that industry is an industry that is pretty powerful. Monsanto mm-hmm. and genetically modified foods.
Big Ag has a lot of power.
And they have
a lot
of lobby power in Congress, right?
Yeah. And I have to say that as much as I give Monica a hard time, she got a very good, candid interview, very lively interview from Neil Young about that whole topic. He had a lot to say and was very, very forceful about those.
Any live acoustic performances?
I tried to get sort of sing along. It didn't
from
happen.
From Monica, you can also hear in that episode, Monica's actually got a food policy jingle that she plays.
Miranda and I came up with a little food
her
policy
daughter, Miranda.
Jingle. And you could listen to it at chewing.xyz. Mm-hmm. It starts out the episode. We could maybe do a few bars. What do you think?
No, yeah, Miranda's in studio
food
with us.
Food policy time.
Yeah, it's a cappella.
Everybody loves.
Sing along now.
Right. Food policy time. Dunk, dunk, dunk. That's
going to be one of the most downloaded food policy jingles of all time.
I was thinking that maybe Neil Young would hear it right. And think maybe backup singer, guitar player.
That's when I was worried. Monica was going to try to palm
yeah,
him a
right.
cassette, you know.
But that was the real reason to go in the trailer. Listen,
right, yeah. Right. I've got a demo
for a food policy jingle.
We talked to Michael Pollan. We talked to the head of the Farm Bureau because I wanted to get, you know, a more sort of mainstream view. And then the Illinois Farmers Union. So I feel like it's a very informative podcast.
I mean, you've been covering this issue for a long time. When we hear that it's going to be a patchwork of states and Vermont is much more sort of progressive state when it comes to agriculture and farming, where does the Midwest fit in when it comes to labeling? Does the state of Illinois have any say in one way or the other in what you think they may go?
Well, there have been quite a few attempts to label in Illinois. The last one was from a representative out of Peoria whose name escapes me at this point. He said he wasn't going to bring it to a vote until he really had gathered the kind of consensus he would need to pass it. I believe he's still working on it. It's, you know, this would be a tough state to pass that kind of legislation in. California almost did. Oregon almost did. Washington State almost did. A lot of people are saying instead of having all these state-by-state fights, which could become very, very expensive, I talked to a representative from the Farm Bureau, and I said, do you understand how when consumers see millions and millions of dollars go into campaign after campaign to stop this labeling, how they could start to distrust the technology, saying, wait, why are you paying millions so that I don't know this is in my food?
Yeah, right. That's
and
the
he
issue.
Said, you know, that was probably, he said it was probably a mistake from the beginning. He said there should have been a different approach to it.
And that was actually one of the questions that one of the farmers that Monica interviewed kind of asked Norbert. He said,
from the Illinois Farmers Union.
And he was kind of like, I guess I kind of don't understand, you know? I mean, because all this millions of dollars, you think it's a good product, then why wouldn't they label?
There's some food for thought mm-hmm. in that.
Yes.
And they say that that's just bad marketing.
They said they probably should have taken a different approach from the beginning because they should have been proud of their product. So here we are.
Louisa Chew, Monica Eng, chewing.xyz. You can find the podcast. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about the dress code stuff. This mm-hmm. was a story that popped up last week, mm-hmm. And it brings back, it kind of brings just a bad taste in your mouth about policies here in Chicago that this story seems to sort of pop up. Every other year, there's something that pops up about someone who wasn't let into a club because of some strange code. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. The It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Chewing in studio, Louisa Chu, Monica Ng. Louisa Chu is a Chicago Tribune food writer. Monica Ng works for the local public radio station. Both covering food. They have a podcast together, Chewing. You find it at chewing.xyz.
And I want to say that was, thank you for choosing that. That was Neil Young's Monsanto Years, his song about Monsanto.
I thought we were going to sing along for a minute there.
That's him.
Monica was.
Talking about DJ. Call me a DJ. That's our DJ, a resident DJ. If you stick around long enough tonight, he's going to throw out like neon glow sticks.
Wow.
Right.
And he's, he gets EDM. He's very EDM as he gets later into the night. All right. So, we were talking about GMOs. Let's switch to Chicago food, restaurants, and bars. Obviously, the story, which was about 2 weeks ago now, a gentleman tried to get into a popular bar on the West Loop called Parlor.
Well, it's actually not just a bar. It's a
pizza
Parlor
restaurant, right?
Pizza Bar. It is actually a pizza restaurant that serves Neapolitan-style pies, as well as being a sports bar. And so this story came up because this man wanted to watch game two of the NBA playoffs with his wife. And he was denied entry by security, who told him that his pants were too straight. And so the issue came up because then he and his wife were puzzled and left. And then notice outside where they have a big open patio.
It's packed,
that,
by the way.
Usually that place is packed. I mean, it's one of these, big corner. It's right in the West Loop on the corner of Green and Washington, right across from the Soho House.
It's right in the place
in,
that they just all have to build in.
Exactly.
There's one block in Chicago you have to build in. Right. It's the West Loop right there. Every restaurant, every worn factory is like, that door right there is now a barbecue place. That place, let's do ramen. That place, something
it
else.
Is the black hole of hipness in Chicago. And so open bar, and they noticed that people were wearing much more casual clothing than he was wearing. So they were questioning about perhaps that this was based on something else.
What's that something
else? Well, they alleged, actually, the whole point was actually they filed a complaint with the City of Chicago's Human Rights Commission.
Right.
He's black. Alleging, yes, he's black, as is his wife, racial discrimination. And so the story came out that his pants, which I reported they were wool blend trousers made by a fashion brand called Vince that appeared to be sweatpants. And so here's the thing that's kind of puzzling, was puzzling to them as well as when I was reporting it, was at the restaurant itself, there's a very small sign that says appropriate attire required or something.
Right.
I don't remember the exact wording in there, but appropriate apparel.
No fancy sweatpants.
Well, not specifically, but on the website, actually, it has a whole list of after 5 o'clock, certain types of clothing are not allowed. No oversized clothing, no sweatpants was one of the things that was not allowed. And so they were questioning that. So the whole story came up. And as you were saying earlier, it's not so much the issue of alleged racial discrimination, but people were complaining about the price of the sweatpants.
Well,
or the alleged sweatpants.
Well, like I said, it seems like this kind of rears its head in Chicago, especially at nightclubs.
Exactly.
Often. And unfortunately, and I don't have the answer, and I don't want to insinuate anything, but it always seems to surround a black patron who can't get in because they're not dressed appropriately. And it kind of reeks in a way, because you're like, wait a second, these are $250 pants, man.
And the whole point is that we should not necessarily care about how much the price of pants are, because, of course, Monica wearing her fine ensemble of, sure, I'm guessing, like, $750 pair of jeans.
Yeah.
Salvation Army.
Exactly. We should first point out that dress codes are allowed in the City of Chicago, but they need to be enforced completely.
Uniformly.
There can't be an indiscriminate enforcement.
So that's by the city. Well, that's what the city's approach is, or their stance is, that if you have a dress code, it has to be uniform. You can't just pick and choose.
Correct. It needs to be
consistently. Seems to be happening at Parlor, because as I saw on Facebook, everybody who wrote anything took a picture of when they were in their running shoes and their workout outfits or whatever, what have you.
Yeah. And so when I spoke with the Human Rights Commissioner here in Chicago, I asked, of course, about any some similar cases that had been settled by the city that have been explored and investigated by the city. So there was a few years ago in Chicago, Mother's Nightclub, for example, mm-hmm. where there were college students who came to Chicago and they approached the door and the black college student was not allowed in because he was told that his pants were too baggy.
Yeah.
And so he and his friend, who was a white college student, then exchanged the exact same pair of pants.
Oh.
And in fact, the white student was smaller and the pants were even bigger on him. And he went right back around and he was allowed in wearing the pants that were even baggier. So that was a separate case that was already investigated.
Let me ask
settled.
You this, though. Parler, what I was surprised was the emphatic doubling down by Parler, where they said, we have a strict dress code and we adhere by it. Sorry, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there wasn't this sort of idea
my
that...
My bad, or,
you know, it's at nighttime and we didn't know they were expensive pants or any sort of olive branch. They really, the management kind of put out a trite statement that was like, if you want to be in our bar, we expect you to dress according to the rules.
Right. They released a statement saying that they wanted an elevated experience. And again, they are allowed to have dress codes and they're allowed to have them at a certain time. For example, again, this is 5 o'clock and after, as long as it's consistently enforced. And not only do they have the location in the West Loop, which is kind of, as we were saying, sort of the nexus of hip and hipsterism, but they also just opened a second location on Division in Wicker Park, another nexus of a lot of people who might be wearing
clothing. It kind of reminds me of a story. I used to write a column in the Chicago Tribune called Food and Wine, and that's W-H-I-N-E, where people would write in about their complaints about restaurants. And there was a fairly well-known person in the Chicago theater community who had recently undergone chemotherapy. So she was wearing a hat. She went to lunch with a very well-known person, Richard Christensen, in the Chicago theater community. They went to Kiefer for lunch. They would not allow her in the dining room
while wearing
with her
a hat?
Cap on.
Huh.
And he said it was a terrible experience. And so I called them for the story, and they said, I'm sorry, but people in gangs wear hats in the Kiefer. I said, she had cancer. She was recovering from
chemotherapy. But at least in that case, they're like, hey, we got to, they probably were like, okay, for discrimination purposes, anyone who wears a hat.
Yeah, maybe
is
that
out.
Was the uniform code.
Yeah.
But I just, and then, so then I called Miss Manners and they said, well, no, women aren't supposed to take off hats in dining rooms. Only men should. And that was, kind of a throwback.
It's an interesting problem, because I'm just, maybe it's worth a segment, like another segment about nightclubs and attire. And what's acceptable and what's not, because that just seems like there was a lot that went into that story that just seemed like it was leaning towards, a person not being allowed because of their race. But mm-hmm. I also watched the news report and I mm-hmm. read the story and I also scratched my head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, there's a couple of things missing in this story that I'm not sure what's happening.
Well, here. I'm definitely going to be continuing to report on that because of the claim was just filed. It's going to be investigated by the city, and there still is an opportunity for response on both sides. So it is very interesting. And again, we should clarify, people can have dress codes. As I reported in the story, too, the wife in this situation had said, too, you can have dress codes. You can say nobody can wear anything purple, but it just needs to be consistently enforced.
I used to tell this story when I was 23, mm-hmm. right? Went to a bar on Southport. Forgot the name of it. And I went up to the door and I was with somebody who had a ticket or didn't have their ID or something like that, right? And they were like, and I was advocating for that person. I was like, no, they're fine, man. Just the ticket works. And the guy grabs my ID and he goes, the ticket's fine. You can't come in. This bar is 25 and up.
What?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of a bar like that.
Yeah. It was a 25 and up, like, we don't want young 21-year-olds on the strip in Southport. Oh. I was a respectable 23,
right.
Louisa.
Yes.
They didn't know.
I was a mature.
Just in
I was
20.
Mature. I had a day job. Like, I had a collared shirt on.
Yeah.
I was offended that I was grouped in with these hoodlum 21-year-olds.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Then,
so I know I feel discrimination.
You go.
I just got mad at the guy and I went to Justin's like a block up. So
right.
Appropriately.
Where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's beautiful.
All right. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. Let's talk about lead in not only the schools, but the park districts. Mm-hmm. And then let's also talk about what we would eat. Sound
and
good?
Not eat.
And not eat, right. Monica Eng, Louisa Chu, chewing.xyz. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, two of my favorite people, Louisa Chu, Monica Ang. Chuang. It should be Chuang.
Yeah, right. Chuang.
Chuang.
Right. Well, that might be appropriate for our later conversation.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so chewing.xyz is where you can find the podcast. How often do you put them out? Every other week?
Every two weeks. Last Friday we put out our GMO podcast, and then this next, not today, but a week from today.
You need that much time to savor.
We're putting out our, is it the cooks and books,
it's
or is
actually
it
fat
animals?
Books, because we talked to Fat Rice chefs, owners, and new authors. They've got a book coming out, Abe Conlon and Adrian Lowe. Mm-hmm. And we happen
That's
to be
great.
Able to, yeah, so we got a preview of their new bakery and speakeasy space, as well as we talked to them and had them taste a surprise jelly bean.
Rotting fish flavored jelly bean.
It was not rotting fish. The
dead
new,
fish, sorry.
Right. Dead fish, which is kind of thematic.
That's what I mean. And in the podcast, there's much more of this, the arguing with each other. That's the part I miss on WGN.
I
like the podcast when you're arguing with each other.
A discussion. I prefer to thoughtful,
provocative. Louisa will even argue with you
discussion.
About whether you can call it arguing.
No, not at all.
Anyway.
All right, let's talk about lead in the water in schools. That's what we were just talking about for the last month.
Yeah.
But it's going to make a transition here, and you broke this story, that you know what we should do for the summer is be checking for lead in the park district.
I want to bring people down wherever they go. So now that the kids are out of school, in 1 week, July 6th, they start day camp. I'm a park district day camp kid, went pretty much my whole childhood.
We're a park district family.
Yeah, and 40,000 Chicago children will be enrolling in summer camps in 2 weeks. Well, less than 2 weeks. And so I asked what a lot of people would ask, hey, what are you guys doing about the fountains in the park district?
It is the fountain, because those are a lot, the parks are a little bit more run down. You've got old drinking fountains, you know, where's that water coming from? I mean, there's a lot. That's actually a real sort of, that's a good place to look for lead in the water.
Absolutely. And so I didn't hear back. And actually, I'm working with Curious City at the public radio station, and someone wrote in and said, I jog along that path. Can you tell me where I can find stats on park district fountains? Finally, they got back to me and they said, well, I'll tell you, Monica, we're doing a pilot in 60 field houses across the city, and we're doing 20 in the north, 20 central, 20 south. I didn't know that the park district were broken down by three regions, but they're taking an equal amount from each. And they say they hope to have the results by July. I said, before the kids start camp? They are not answering whether or not it will be before the kids start camp.
Well, they start right after the 4th of July, right?
Right.
And that's right at, so they're not going to have the results by the 4th of July.
They might, but they're not saying. And I think that's really crucial, because I think a lot of parents, before sending your kid on a 90-degree day to camp, would like to know if they checked the water.
Wow. Well, it is interesting, because, you know, that kind of information would be useful. But let's be frank. I mean, there's probably going to be lead in some of that water. If the schools had the rate that they had, the park district's field houses, which are much older, are going to have the same rate.
Well, it's very interesting, because as I pressured CPS to please, please check, and they kept, you know, saying, speak to the hand, don't bother me. When they finally decided to do it, they're like, fine, out of an abundance of caution, we will check. But Forrest Claypool actually said, I don't think we're going to find anything. And now we see that, I believe the latest one was 27 or 29 schools have not just lead, but lead that exceeds, and in some cases far exceeds, what the EPA
now, how many,
but,
I mean, there's a percentage there, because 27, 28, 29 schools.
So about
versus
30%. So they have 90-something that they've released the results on,
right.
And 29 levels.
Is that a big enough sample size to start testing other schools? I mean, obviously 90 is just a small percentage of
right.
the district.
So after I badgered them, they said, okay, fine, we'll do a pilot. We'll do 28 schools.
And all of your stories are like, after I badgered them.
Basically, my job is to be a pain in the neck.
Why don't we, that's a new podcast, after I badgered
right.
them with Monica.
That's your job?
After Monica irritated them enough, they said, fine, if you just stop it, we'll check 28 schools. And they only found one in that pilot program. But they said, because we found one, I guess we'll find more. And now they're finding about a third consistently, a third of all the results that they release have schools with these dangerous, you know, very, actually in many cases, very dangerous levels of lead in the water. And one of the worst was at a school for developmentally disabled kids ages 2 through 6. These kids already have some issues they're dealing with, and to be drinking water with lead at, I believe, 22 times the federal limit, that's just not good.
Well, to the, I mean, there's not, this is not a situation where it's necessarily corruption that Chicago Public Schools is trying to, they recognized that 20 years ago and they're like, well, look the other way. This is something that just because of Flint, Michigan, and because of the issues that came up, they're like, oh, we should check our system. It's inevitable because those buildings were built so long ago and the pipes underneath the buildings, there's going to be some lead. What do you do now? If you're CPS expensive. With no money, how do you take care of lead in the water if a school tests positive?
There is some federal legislation to put aside some money for remediation and at least for testing. I believe Charles Schumer out of New York has proposed putting some money toward getting schools checked. Because, you know, it's not an evil thing. It's not an evil conspiracy. The fact is they've had bigger fish to fry. They've had more immediate problems. And so this always went on the back burner. But with Flint, it got a lot of people checking. And honestly, LA and New York have been dealing with lead remediation in their schools for the last decade. Hmm. So it's about time that we at least caught up and started checking.
A Texas came in and said, why don't you stick Friends of the Park on them?
They seem to have some clout around here.
All right. We'll continue the conversation here with Louisa Chu and Monica Eng. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up with a segment
It's going to be a doozy.
Yeah. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're wrapping up another great hour with Louisa Chu and Monica Eng. Chewing, the podcast which comes out every other week at chewing.xyz. You can find it on iTunes. You can also find it at chicagotribune.com/chewing podcast. Mm-hmm. So we talked about we had four topics to get to tonight. We talked about, let's recap. Are you ready for the recap? Mm-hmm. I'll do my Doogie Howser. We talked about GMOs and the big movement this week, or non-movement, in Congress and the Senate. We talked about dress codes and appropriate conduct at bars when we talk about what happened with the wool sweatpants. Don't ever buy wool sweatpants.
Not for 200.
We just talked about lead in the schools, but also lead possibly in the water at Chicago Park District, which is a big issue because camp's starting a week. And so we end with a segment we've been doing where a couple weeks ago you guys had me try a terrible, like really old egg.
Right, no. 1,000-year-old egg.
Right, yeah. Which is a specialty of Chinese cuisine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Delicious, very meaty. Mm-hmm. Speaking of meaty,
meaty Chinese.
All right, so let's talk about the one that you guys are thinking about today. There's no taste test, but what's the issue?
So our former colleague at the Chicago Tribune, Kevin Pang, he went to the Beijing Olympics 8 years ago, and he went to a very special type of restaurant that served nothing but penises from many different animals. And he and Bill Plaschke, I believe, who is the LA Times sports columnist, they went together and they tried a lamb penis, they tried a bull penis. And then when it came time for a black dog penis, they had ethical issues because they'd had dogs growing up.
Right.
And so we did an interview, 8 years later with Kevin to see if he regretted his decision to abstain. And I can't tell you because you'll have to listen to the podcast to hear about his thoughts or regrets that moment.
I don't want to hear about Kevin Pang's regrets about not eating a dog penis.
Well, it's our animal style episode. And so we kind of talk about the ethics of that.
Did you guys get real passionate and dramatic where you're like, Kevin, do you regret?
Take me back.
Take me back.
How were you feeling?
How were you feeling when you bit into the lamb penis? All right, so let me. What I'm interested in is the delicacy. Is it something that's high end? Was it a high end restaurant? Was it more like a shop? What was the restaurant experience?
It was a hot pot restaurant, and that's where they bring you out raw meats and raw vegetables, and you dip them in the broth and you cook them.
Okay.
And Well, I can.
Wait,
I
the
can,
hot pot you're ewing already?
No, just the idea that it's raw.
Raw, yeah.
Right,
sliced.
Kind of in discs and slices.
Penises.
And yeah. So, all right. So he.
Right. They're
so
always delicacies when they're like that.
And you can go on YouTube, actually, and look for that video. I believe it's, you look for Bill Plaschke, if you remember how to spell that LA Times writer's name, eating dog penis. You can find that on YouTube right
Come
now.
Come on, man.
And their whole discussion.
Don't do it at work.
And we basically, we talked to Kevin as a way to launch a discussion about how do we decide what's okay to eat and what's not okay to eat? Is it all just cute things aren't okay to eat?
Well, especially because as I am the guardian of a black dog, you know, we sort of propose
don't let
that
Kevin go near
a black boy dog, actually, too. You know, we sort of discuss that about whether or not we would eat dog or penises. And I mean, and Monica being the guardian of two adopted bunny rabbits, two black bunny rabbits, they were actually originally destined to be food on a farm. I mean, where do we draw those lines? And so I think it's, you know, and especially actually right now, it kind of came up because I'm sure many people have seen now on social media. Now, again, it is the time of the Chinese Yulin Dog Festival, which is highly controversial because of the way that the dogs are treated or mistreated, and specifically for, again, these, you know, very virile purposes for eating these dogs as well as at these penis restaurants. And yet here in this country, and I know we've talked about this before, especially for the egg episode, we are a culture that finds it acceptable to grind up live fluffy yellow baby boy chicks. And so what are the
because
differences?
Because they're not useful as layer hens.
Right. So that was for our egg episode, which is why we brought in the egg that time. So
yeah, there's a, I mean, there's ethical question about it, and it's the 10-year-old boy in me is just dying laughing at this. I hesitate to even ask the question of, I mean, the consistency, or it's a hot pot, so you...
He said, well, I got him to describe in loving detail the consistency. He said, gristly, tendiny, chewy, not much flavor, but very gelatinous. Mm-hmm. He said, pretty gelatinous. Right. And actually, if you go to Tank Noodle at Broadway and Argyle, they do have one special pho, one special beef noodle soup that they call cow penis, which is not possible. You guys need to change that menu. But you see little buttons in there, little round things.
All right.
And I got to say, if you like breaded and deep fried those, they'd sell
at the fair.
Hotcakes, exactly. Maybe, right, exactly. That would be great.
On a stick.
At a street festival.
Exactly.
Right. Funnel cakes.
Made out of penises.
Tacos, yes. And then you've got the penises. Luisa Chu, Monica Ang. Chewing is the podcast. You can find it at chewing.xyz. It's every other week. You can also find it at chicagotribune.com/chewingpodcast. Great to see you guys. See you in a couple weeks.
Thanks,
man.
Justin. Great to see you, too.